Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. We're at it here on a Monday, ready to talk some mixed martial arts. We got some results from this past weekend and some news to discuss, especially one hot big topic from this past week involving UFC commentator Joe Rogan. All right, so first things first, I always forget, but I'm going to try not to. In fact, I know I'm not because I'm about to say it. We have a guest. It's Mark Ratner, UFC Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, who also has a book coming out. So we'll talk to him in a bit, along with the results, along with the hot topics. It's going to be a great way to start your week on a Monday, February 7th. All right, Goes, let's ease our way into this because I know we want to spend some time talking about everything that's going on in the world of Joe Rogan. But this past Saturday, we did have a UFC fight night, which had Jack Hermanson versus Sean Strickland at the top of the bill. Sean Strickland kind of made easy work, even though it does say split decision. One judge did give his card to Jack Hermanson. I thought most of the MMA world basically had a Sean Strickland landslide, at least 49-46, a ton of 48-47s, and even some 50-45s out there. I felt like 49-46 was pretty accurate. But yeah, there was one judge, Sal Diamato, that did say Jack Hermanson. And when that happens, you hold your breath because anything can, if one guy did it, another guy can, right? But anyway, Sean Strickland won. And now, of course, he advances in the unofficial middleweight tournament that's kind of going out there. It happens in every weight class. They're all in an unofficial tournament, if you think about it. And it's just that at the end, the results don't really dictate whether you get the title shot or not. It's a little bit of that and a little bit of, I guess, the politics of each division.
Mm-hmm. I'm usually pretty nice when it comes to UFC cards. I rarely come across one that I don't enjoy. I didn't really enjoy this one. It had its moments, but the main event didn't make you feel like you were tuning in for something special. And the way they fought, I understand getting the W. I get that. But it just wasn't that entertaining. And then on top of that, to get that horrific score, man, like, I don't know how you explain that other than I wrote the wrong name. That's literally, I think, the only thing you could say on a Monday that would excuse you from that. It was just it's terrible.
It looked like Sean Strickland was sparring with Jack Hermanson. Once he stopped his takedowns, did he get up? I think he got up one time, so maybe Hermanson had one takedown. Yeah, but once all that stopped and they just basically were kickboxing, Hermanson would have some nice lunging strikes from time to time that looked like, oh, if he were to hit the button, he could possibly hurt her, Sean Strickland, in the way of a knockout, a knockdown, or just maybe making him stagger. But that wasn't happening. Sean Strickland had a good beat on what was happening on the feet. Sean Strickland, on the other hand, was kind of having his way with Jack Hermanson. Just boom, boom, volume, touch, touch, volume, touch, touch. And just making the other guy feel uncomfortable. And that's why I thought he was winning rounds convincingly 10-9. Now, Sean Strickland's got a nice record. He's definitely an interesting character, to say the least. Controversial for sure. Heck, that could be its own topic. But, he's not going to... Going to the ground with Jack Hermanson is definitely not a good idea. So he did what was necessary to stop that. And then he outpointed the other guy. Now, what hurts a little bit is many people felt like, could Strickland possibly leapfrog the winner of Cannonier Brunson if one of them two were to have the type of result like Sean Strickland had that we're talking about. He got the win, but you know, I wasn't feeling like he had something for the winner of Israel Adesanya versus Whitaker. Hey, Sean Strickland looked great the week before. You know, he pounded so-and-so. No, we're not saying that.
I think it would take a really, really bad performance for him to be able to leapfrog. And it would take Sean Strickland to have an incredible performance for that to happen. I just think what's right is right, and I think a solid victory there. Yeah, I mean, Sean would have to do something pretty spectacular, and they would just have to completely shit the bed. That's the only way I could have seen that happening. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you described the best sparring session. It's just sort of what it looked like. We don't really get that from Sean too much, so I completely give him a pass on it. But the card itself, you know, the UFC didn't really give you that much. The tough finale, that's what I call it, that was fun. You know, that was fun. I think that's the type of fight that, well, I mean, we'll get to it. But overall, I think the card just seemed to lack a little oomph. And if you look at the schedule, I feel like we have a lot of those coming up.
I would agree. I think a lot of us are starting to get worn down from shows at the Apex. And I love the Apex, and I shouldn't be saying this, but I think too many in a row at the Apex kind of gives that, you know, what you turn in on a tune in for on Tough, where it's just kind of like a minimal crowd and it's the two fighters that are fighting on Tough, and then the winner just proceeds through the season, or even a little bit of Dana White Contender Series, except that has its own unique twist in that they're trying to make the UFC. So not only do you have to win, you got to impress, and then the boss at the end, you know, reveals the names. So you kind of sit on your hand, you know, on the edge of your seat for different reasons there. Here, you know, you're in a batch of 12, 15 fights or whatever it is that particular Saturday. And I don't know. The crowd makes such a big difference. The Apex does invite people to come in, but there's not really that crazy walkout, you know, with people hanging to the side, trying to get a high five, maybe getting somebody's hat. There just isn't. There's just two guys that are quietly. You know what it looks like, guys? Remember when Sean, what was his name? The Boston police officer fought Kimbo?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was it? Sean Gannon. When he fought Kimbo Slice. It just kind of looks like that feel when they're walking them in. It almost looks like, you know, just someone walking up the set of steps or going down a certain alley, turning in, opening the door, and then there's a few fans waiting. All right, let's go. It's on, you know, except they have a nice proper announcer like Bruce Buffer, and they make some announcements throughout the broadcast where they say the new coaches for Tough will be Juliana Pena and Amanda Nunes. Oh, look, Aljamain Sterling's in the crowd. You know, a couple things like that. By the way, Kenny Florian was in that crowd, if anybody noticed. And but yeah, that, like I say, so as you're watching it, you're, you know, if you have a couple TVs going and you see Alabama and Kentucky and college basketball with people with their faces and their bodies painted, and then you got, you know, a bunch of fans cheering on the Pro Bowlers for football or the NHL All-Stars and skills competitions, you can see where the other one seems, I guess, less entertaining. So it's now up to the fighters to do something crazy to get your eyes to move or for you to click that channel.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, it reminds me of, you know what it's like when you tune into a WWE pay-per-view, right? Or WWF back in the day. And then you knew what it was like to tune into like Saturday night's main event or, you know, primetime wrestling. This reminds me of like WWF superstars or whatever that would come on like at Saturday at noon. And you'd have like some decent names, but they weren't always matched up against the best guy. They just kind of in and out. But the last fight of the day kind of was worth watching. It kind of reminds me of that. Or like Glow. Remember Glow Wrestling? Where you just have this small crowd and even they kind of don't even really seem to be into it too much.
Or how about NWA on TBS a long time ago? That was during the day.
Yeah, something like that. Like, and it's weird because this to me was so great when it first started. But I think maybe it's a little watered down or something. I don't know. I couldn't get up for it.
Enough fighters tell us the same thing. Man, I want to fight in front of the fans. You know, they either haven't and they want to, or they have and they know the difference. And then you get a few that go, "Nah, man, a fight's a fight." Okay, yeah, but most say, you know, the other thing. And I've sat in that Apex, and I've sat at T-Mobile, and I've sat at MGM, and Mandalay Bay and even other arenas, I know the difference between a buzz, the electricity that's generated by a booming sound or production or, you know, those different graphs that flow through a stadium of some sort, than the Apex, which, again, the Apex is fantastic, man. I have no problem with it. It's just I don't know. It starts to stick out like a sore thumb when a fight like this takes place with Strickland and Hermanson, where one guy just doesn't have the answer for the other guy, but yet the other guy can't put away the guy that he had all the answers for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really odd feeling. It's really odd to describe, but I think when you just see too much going on at that Apex, it just becomes redundant a little bit.
You know, Michael Bisping used to take a lot of heat back in the day that he had great techniques, tough son of a bitch, but they used to call him pillow hands. That almost sounds too cruel, you know, because I don't think I'd want to get hit by him. But it, in the sense where it was like a voluminous puncher, even the Diaz brothers, a little bit of the same thing. They just don't really put you away. There's not that threat, you know, but they do it with volume and precise striking. And Strickland, I mentioned Bisping because of the division, and he actually interviewed him after the fight. Kind of reminds me of that. Now, that said, how did Bisping win his title? He knocked out Luke Rockhold. He developed it under Jason Perillo. I think Sean Strickland, as much as he's a gym rat, and I always see him at Extreme Couture, and he loves the throwdown, he loves the spar. I think if he were to just work on turning his hips and putting all of his body into some of those punches, he could develop that just like a Michael Bisping. And if he ever gets the moment, that might make the difference. He may actually win a world title if he can develop that kind of threat and knock someone down and then finish him with some volume ground and pound or something.
That's the thing. He's a master of distance, and he overwhelms you with volume. So it's not like they talked about his defense. His defense is okay. It's good. It's not great. He doesn't really move his head. What he does is he does keep his hands close to his face. But what he does is he overwhelms you to the point that you just don't throw very much. And when you do, you're throwing around his punches. So that's kind of his game. I think he can modify it, and depending on the opponent. I think this is just kind of his mulligan. I don't really think we would see something like this from him again.
What do you think of his playful, controversial, some might even say hurtful way of addressing fans, media, you know, for the promotion of his fights? Where do you stand on that?
It's weird because I don't know. I don't feel like he's playing a part. You know, I think he's just being him. But being him, the thing is, it's like, you know, eventually it's going to get you in trouble. So it makes you cringe a little bit because you're like, is this it? Is this the time where he just crosses the line way too far or what? So for me, it can be a little cringy. But I just feel like at some point he's going to cross the line way too far. And then what? You know what? You get an apology from him? Like, come on. What's the apology worth? Like, so many people have already said, dude, this is going a little too far. I think he's going a little too far because I honestly think – he can be kind of charismatic. I don't think he needs to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a character. I'll give him that. And, you know, his whole gimmick, I guess, is the white trailer trash guy. I know some white people that don't even like that comment.
Oh, yeah.
And but he's playing that part. But I believe that as his popularity grows and his comfort behind the mic grows, he is crossing that line in some respects. I'm not even trudging it or tap dancing it. He crosses it. I think he's just been given the benefit of, well, he's kind of playing a role or whatever. But what's going to happen is I think right now is the time for him to just tighten things up and not do that, and just continue to make bank, win fights, possibly compete for a world title. And, you know, at some point you exit the sport, right? And that's that. But why deny you set yourself of that? He says he wants to make some money. He just made some money this past weekend. And he's going to be, you know, in line for some fights. I mean, we're already discussing that if he had done something great, or in Cannoneer or Brunson laid an egg, he could be next. He's that close.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't let yourself down is what I'm trying to say. And right now I think you can basically nip it in the bud before it gets worse, because it just looks like it could possibly get worse, and the promotion will have to act at some point. You know what I mean? So I've seen other fighters also have to do that.
Well, but that's the other part of the
athletes too.
That's the other part of the argument is, like, you know, when you show up to work late, some places you'll get reprimanded. You know, if you do it again, then it escalates. But I think he's at a job where you can do that. You could show up late and then you kind of look around and you go, hey, nobody said anything. And then you show up a little later the next day and a little later the next day. And, you know, there's employees like Conor McGregor where you could always go, hey, that dude doesn't even show up some days. You know, like the UFC lets you get away with so much mm-hmm. that I think these people just kind of forget about that. I don't even know if that's a thing like that they have to worry about.
You could be right, but I've seen it. I've seen it in my time of covering the sport, and I've seen it in my time as a fan of this sport and other sports. What he's saying has gotten other athletes in trouble. He's getting close. Mm-hmm. So I think right now is his time. Now that the dust is settling and we're turning the page, and Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker takes place on Saturday, UFC 271, Goz and I will be hosting a watch-along for that. Same thing as last time. We have a preview show, the watch-along itself, and then a post-fight show. Farah Hanoun and John Morgan, respectively, again, on that preview and post-fight show this Saturday. Tune in. As we turn the page to this week, now his time, the dust settles. And I think, like I say, he can be pulled aside by the manager, PR team that he may have. Because he's with Adi Attar. He's with Paradigm. They address that, you know, and then just say, look, say this, don't say that. You could be white trailer, whatever you want. You can, but there's certain words, certain slurs that are offensive, and you're either there or close. Because I don't listen to every interview he does. So he may have already said something. I don't know. But I can tell that he's getting close, and he can fix this. All right, the other results from Saturday night, Nick Maximoff defeated Punahele Soriano in the co-main event. Split decision there, win for Maximoff. Shavkat Rachmanov defeated Carlston Harris. That dude looks impressive, man, that Shavkat. Brandon Allen steps in on late notice and defeats Sam Alvey. Sam Alvey's now fallen to 8 fights in a row. Brian Battle defeated Trajan Gore. Goes addressed this earlier. This was supposed to be the tough finale last year, but Trajan Gore was hurt, and he wasn't able to compete. So Brian Battle instead went in there and won the tough finale against Gilbert Urbina. But many felt like this one could possibly be the real tough finale. Brian Battle wins that fight, and that was a unanimous decision. Julian Arosa defeated Steven Peterson. Doubled up there on a bonus, by the way. I'll address that in a second. John Castaneda defeated Miles Johns. Hakeem Duwadu defeated Mike Triziano. Chidi and Jokowani defeated Marc-Andre Barriault. 16 seconds, sorry. What a debut for Chidi and Jokowani, younger brother of Anthony and Jokowani. Alexis Davis defeated Julia Stolarenko. Gilton Almeida defeated Danilo Marquez. Philip Rowe defeated Jason Witt. Malcolm Gordon defeated Dennis Bonder. The performance of the night bonuses go to Shavkat Rachmanov for his win over Carlston Harris, and Chidi Njokuwani for his win over Marc-Andre Barriault. Julian Arosa doubles up because his fight versus Steven Peterson got the fight of the night, but Steven Peterson missed weight by like 4 pounds, by the way. So not only did he get his win in bonus, he got he doubled up on the fight of the night. That's 100K. Yeah. And then I think he probably gets 20% of Peterson's purse.
That's dope, right?
That's juicy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you have it, man. Look, we'll come back to the card in just a second. Let's talk to Mark Ratner, the UFC's Vice President of Government and Regulatory Affairs. He's ready to go. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Gozer back. We got another superstar from the sport of mixed martial arts. It's Vice President of Regulatory Affairs over at the UFC. And, of course, a recent Hall of Famer inducted in the UFC's Hall of Fame in late 2021, the great Mark Ratner. What's up, Mark? How are you?
Not a superstar, but delighted to be with you guys again. So today, I just want you to know before we start, Steely Dan Day. So not quite hardcore rock and roll. I want to start.
All right. Well, but I would push back on the superstar thing. I love this quote from Lawrence Epstein. He says, the sport of mixed martial arts and the UFC simply do not exist in their current form without Mark Ratner. And I was reading this off a recent interview that was done. And, of course, we've always lauded the contributions you've made to the sport. And I know that you've stated that you sometimes feel like this is more about the athletes and this is just a surreal feeling to you that you are in these multiple Hall of Fames. But, wow, hearing words like that, that's got to sound pretty cool at some point. Please let those soak in, right?
No, those are wonderful words. I think eventually the sport would have gotten there. Maybe it got there a little quicker going around the country. But from my own personal legacy, at least I can say I was on the ground floor of a new sport. So I'm delighted.
We went from human cockfighting to a sport that's now accepted and is on ESPN. So it's come a long way, and you know, you've definitely had a hand in that. Congratulations. You know, we talked to you when it was announced you were going to be in the Hall of Fame, but I guess we haven't talked to you since then. So our late congrats on that.
Thank you.
Now I wanted to ask you, I mean, you've accomplished a lot in mixed martial arts. You know, a lot of people stopped working, retired or whatever, because of the pandemic. How about you? What keeps you going into that office? Especially because you wear so many hats, you know, you do stuff over at Allegiant Stadium and over at Thomas and Mack, but what keeps you going in combat sports?
Oh, I think it's just the enjoyment. Every day is different here. Listening to Dana, with all the excitement and passion he has, it's still fun for me. And I think it's real important to have something to go to every morning and get up for, so that's what I do. So I'm thrilled that they still have me here.
Have you ever been into the matchmaker meeting on Tuesdays, the famous matchmaker meeting we hear about Tuesday afternoons?
Not really. I mean, that's it's interesting because they come out of there with a lot of matches, but that's not for me. It's just the two matchmakers and Dana and Hunter Campbell. So yeah, and there's plans 3-4 months out in advance, and you got to worry about where you're going and the COVID. So there's a lot of decisions they make.
Here's why I'd like you to reconsider maybe just stumbling into one. Oops, I must have opened the wrong door. I think it would be a shame if we didn't get a version of the Rumble in the Jungle in MMA, spearheaded by the UFC. Having a great, big, imposing, very talented African superstar like Francis Ngannou. And I'm so scared that if this thing doesn't work out, you know, like that, I mean, you guys have Izzy, I get it. Kamaru Usman, I get it. But you're a boxing guy first. Right. Not to say that that's your favorite sport. I'm not saying that. You came from boxing first. Goes and I grew up with boxing first. And there's just so many parallels that I've seen in both sports. And I would love to see Francis Ngannou having some version of that when they go to Africa. And sometimes I just wonder, I mean, Dana's a boxing guy first. Sometimes I just wonder if an older, wiser man could go in there and say, hey, listen, this has to get done.
Well, I do believe we will go to Johannesburg someday. I think that's going to happen. And we have to let this whole Francis and contract play out. Would I love to see it? Absolutely. I was very impressed that that Francis had learned the ground game and changed that fight, because after two rounds, I didn't think that he would have the stamina to get through, and he did, and kept his title.
Yeah, that was tremendous. It was a gutsy performance. And hey, look, plan B is Allegiant Stadium. John Jones versus Francis Ngannou at Allegiant Stadium would be epic as well. So plan B's not so bad.
Right. Okay. I hope that we do a fight someday at Allegiant.
Let's talk about your book, Ringside, My Life Outside the Ropes and the Octagon. You know, when I was on Twitter about a week ago, maybe a little less than a week ago, I saw it and I immediately said, oh, wow, beautiful. I love this. Can't wait. I already have my Amazon opened and ordered and ready to go. Folks, that's where you can get it. I think it seems the easiest way, since so many million of us have the Amazon Prime. You can get it in your hands in a couple days for free. But I want to ask you about one word in the title, outside of the ropes and the octagon. So is this more of a personal, or will you include a lot of stories from everything that took place in the sports?
A lot of stories. When I think outside means that I wasn't in the cage or the ring. But we certainly have a story on the Fan Man, the bite fight, Money Floyd when he fought Zab, and different MMA stories. I had never planned to write a book. What happened was when Endeavor William Morris bought the UFC, some of the executives came to me and have you thought about ever doing that? And I said, no, I would have to have a ghostwriter. I'd have to have it published. And they supplied that. And after about a year, this book has now come out. I would do a chapter at a time, and then we'd go through it after they transcribed it and edit it. But the ghostwriter made me sound more articulate than I really am.
Did this start about a year ago? How long did the whole process take?
I would say probably we started more than a year ago. It was right after, maybe a few months after Conor fought Floyd. So, it's a while ago, and it ends right after the Hall of Fame. So it just kept on getting redone, but it wasn't like I was writing it out longhand. It was all transcribed, phone interviews, in-person stuff. So it worked out great.
Was it all upstairs? Did you ever take notes, keep a journal, or did you have to lean on others to maybe recant stories that where you were maybe a little foggy on a detail that you didn't want to get wrong?
Once the questions started coming, then it reminded me of other things. I double checked some dates, but other than that, yeah, most of it's still in my head, so that's good.
Mark, when people genuinely write books, the one thing that they always say, especially if it's something that they haven't really planned that just kind of came about, is when they get to the end, they almost say, I can already write part two in my head. Where did you, when you finished, were there things that you just never got to? Do you ever feel like maybe there could even be a part two to this book?
No. I'm delighted to keep on going. The book is done. As I said, I wasn't planning on this, but no, it's fine the way it is, and that will be the last book.
When you sat down with the ideas for this book, what was the one thing that stuck out in your head that you said, this has to be in the book?
Well, there's some stuff about family growing up in Las Vegas, and I just wanted to... Everybody knows some of these boxing stories because they were so controversial. So I wanted to make sure I had all that stuff in there. And the beginning of the MMA and with us here. And the whole New York 8 years of going to Albany, that certainly had to be in there. So I had some ideas, but I needed this writer to help bring them out.
Was it all combat sports, or did you get to tiptoe outside, like maybe talk UNLV hoops or anything like that?
Yeah,
everyone forgets that about 30 years ago, UNLV was the toast of the town. Well, not the toast of the United States, with the epic teams that they had, you know, winning NCAA championships, making it to finals, rivalries with Duke, and just, you know, some of the drama that came along with having, you know, young men who are famous in Sin City.
Well, you know, I was running the clock then, and you know, I was thinking about that last night. This was a big game with Nevada Reno, a big rivalry game, and they probably had maybe 7,000 there, and they had to give away tickets, and that saddens me. It still should be a hot ticket, and hopefully Coach Cougar will keep on winning, and I don't know if we'll ever get to that point again, but there should be more than most of the games they had, 4,000, 5,000. I'm just hoping that there's a lot of basketball fans here. The high school basketball is getting better and better, and hopefully UNLV will keep on improving, and we'll have some of those big crowds again. But I thought about that last night.
All right, Goes, you said you wanted to, you had a few more questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, Mark, I wanted to ask you, you know, George brought something up at the beginning of the interview, the rumble in the jungle, and we're huge boxing fans, but I had thought about something as well that Davidson Figueiredo brought up himself, and that's going to Mexico City. There's something about going down there, whether it's boxing or even big soccer games. There's just this huge buzz. But what I wanted to know from you was, I know recently UFC wasn't able to go to Brazil. Is it just kind of a country by country thing? Would you say Mexico's a little further down as far as being able to get there safely and all that? Like, how realistic is it to maybe possibly go back to Mexico and some of these other countries?
Well, it's all about the protocols and who they'll allow in and vaccinations. So it's not quite as easy. We've had very successful shows in Mexico City. When you're talking about a major fight there, it's always financial too. How much can you charge? Can you do it at a right time on pay-per-view? So there's a lot of questions that would have to be answered. But we've had shows in Mexico City, and very enjoyable. So when you're talking about big Hispanic shows, there's no better place in Southern California, though, to do something, whether it's Anaheim or Staples, big crowds, enthusiastic. That was pretty much, I'd say, last in Anaheim, probably close to 70% Moreno fans. It was really something. And the energy there was wonderful. And we can charge the right kinds of prices there. So it turned out very, very well. But would I like to go back to Mexico City, to Brazil, someday to Johannesburg? Yes. And we are going to London March 19th, so I'm excited about that.
Just a personal question, back to the book a little bit. Something that got me thinking was, have you been to every continent, Mark? Is there anywhere in the world that you've always wanted to go that you haven't hit? Not for sports, just to be on.
Continent wise, certainly we have not been to Antarctica. We have not been to South Africa. We are planning a show, hopefully, when everything works out, in France, in Paris, in the fall. I think that would be a big, huge show. I'd like to see us do a show. I'm more Europe that I like. Maybe in Spain someday, maybe in Italy, but it's always about the protocols right now. And it's always important to have a fighter that's from that area, too. And that's why if France has fought Gone again, maybe that's the kind of fight you bring to Paris. So there's just a lot of things that might happen, that could happen. So, the traveling is great, but it's all about the health of the world.
Now, I meant more you, yourself, like just the personal journeys. Have you hit almost every continent? And are there any places that you personally just want to go and hang out?
Not as much. We went to Buenos Aires a couple years ago. That was really special for me. I love going to Sweden and Australia. Those places have been wonderful just to go to. If I were going to travel on my own, I'd probably go back to Melbourne or Sydney. But there's no place that I'd really say, gee, I got to go there. I've been a lot of places, and it's been a wonderful ride.
Why was Buenos Aires special to you? Was there a certain reason for that one?
I don't know. The architecture, and I went to I had knowledge of Eva Perón and that whole political world, and Don't cry for me, Argentina. It was just a, something, a special trip. And what I do, I, sometimes I take these bus trips looking at some of these places because
you
can't do it on your own. And so maybe some people can, but I like having a tour guide and look around. And so that was enjoyable. I don't know. Maybe because everybody speaks English, even in those countries, too.
You know, bus trips are definitely the way to go. I took one in Edinburgh, Scotland. It was great. That guy was knowledgeable. We got to see a lot of the city. I did a taxi tour in England, which was also great, but kind of sitting way up top. I think I prefer that. I recommend that for people as well. That's where I found out Georgie Porgy was born, was in Edinburgh, Scotland, that saying. But going back to Buenos Aires, I had always wanted to go there, and I got to go there in 2005. I walked a lot then. I should have done a bus tour. And I echo what you said, that architecture totally made you feel like you were in Europe. But what I got to see there was one of the highlights for me was getting to see Boca Juniors, the soccer team, play. And oh man, that's got to be the craziest atmosphere I've ever seen for any sport. And I'm sure there was a lot of fire regulations that were broken that day. They crazy stuff happens down in South America. But I got to see Maradona. Like, he's in a suite and he's always like trying to lead the crowd, you know, and he was there. That's his beloved team. So this is when he was still with us. But yeah, Buenos Aires, I would love to go back there again. And I'd love for Goes to see a soccer game there as well. That was a great city. That's very cool that you co-signed on that one. And they have a good boxing history too. A lot of good boxers have come out of Argentina, man. I'm hoping MMA. I know we have Santiago Ponzinibbio and a couple other guys, but I hope they start pumping out more.
Yeah, they have a great history of fights. I think there was one that Roldan or something from there. Purple, Argentina, all of South America, and boxers or athletes who do good nationally or internationally, they carry the whole country on their back. Whether it was like Chavez in Mexico, it's a different world. We don't really have an America's boxer. De La Hoya was close, but Ali at the end, but probably since Joe Louis, where the whole country couldn't wait to see him fight. It's a different in the world when it's your country.
Agreed. And I know I always push this stadium topic on you, but are you even a fan of stadium shows? I've always felt like the UFC should do one per year. But I know the weather has a lot to do with it, but I always think of Hawaii, but they always say the rain. Melbourne was outstanding. I knew you guys would knock it out of the park there. Ireland, of course, when Connor was at the top, but Mexico City, going back to that, I'd love to see Moreno and Figueredo do what Greg Haugen and Julio Cesar Chavez did at Azteca. That's quite a challenge too, because it's 8,000 feet altitude, you know, outside, you know, that air pollution is no joke in Mexico City either.
No, I remember watching that Haugen fight, and it was, yeah, he got beat up pretty good, but they had 110,000 or 130,000. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and Pacquiao and Claudia in Dallas, and then we had the one at Wembley with Klitschko and Anthony Joshua. Man, those are just epic events. Do you favor those types of settings, or are you more of an arena guy?
I'm much more of an arena guy. I think the enthusiasm, the excitement of a big crowd, but it's really becomes a, you got to watch it on TV and on the screens. And even in our fights, when the guys are on the ground, you have to look at the screens. So, I like the intimacy of a Thomas and Mack or an MGM or a T-Mobile much more than a big, big stadium. That's my personal belief.
I'm not sure if I've asked you this before, but what are your thoughts on bringing in 165 and 175 pounds, you know, so that we have from 105 all the way up to 205 in blocks of 10. You have any thoughts on that?
It's always a point of discussion. So far, we have not not gone for that. Could it happen someday? Very possibly, but it's something that it's interesting, and we'll see. But that's the kind of decisions that would go from come from Dana and people way above me. So if they want to do it, fine. If not, we're doing great the way it is.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people say, I don't want it to be like boxing. Boxing has, from 105 to 135, which is lightweight, 9 weight classes. But in MMA, there's only 4. So I don't find it to be anything like, oh, it'll turn into boxing. But I think it'll be perfect, and I hope it's done. It looks like Khabib's going to do that with his promotion now. Kevin Lee's going to, and Diego Sanchez are going to debut at 65. But yeah, my prediction is the UFC is going to go in that direction at some point. I just have this feeling. I don't know why.
Well, as I say, we'll see. It is interesting, and I hope Kevin Lee does well there, and Diego. I want these guys to make a buck, so if it works out for them, great. So, I'm all for the fight.
Let's finish up again with the book here. The book has already dropped, folks, and you can get it on Amazon. It's called Ringside, My Life Outside the Ropes and Octagon. And by the way, I feel foolish for asking you if it had to do with personal until you explain, well, you're sitting outside the octagon and ropes. Right. But what would you like people to take the most out of your book? Do you feel like maybe you have to know that you've probably inspired a lot of people to be part of commissions and be involved, whether it's judging, reffing, or the commissions themselves, or regulatory affair type of work like you do? I mean, is it that? Is it just the experiences of being involved in something you're passionate about? Or is it just you relaying the stories that people may not know about?
Well, it's probably all of the above. My goal really is to inspire people to become officials in all these sports. This is a big nationwide problem. We don't have enough officials coming into, enough people coming into for high school sports. It's great to say, boy, they're in the NBA or they're doing NFL stuff. But even here in Las Vegas, we don't have enough officials for all the high schools. Sometimes we have to go every day. And it's not a glamorous profession. People yell at you. And right now, there's a lot of disrespect amongst the players and the coaches. And I think that's my major goal, maybe not from the book, but keep on getting new officials, getting young guys. We're teaching a class at UNLV, trying to get some of their students to get into officiating. So,
oh, nice.
So that's one of my personal goals, is to grow the officiating community.
How do you think we can change that, where the athletes, they are so rude and disrespectful towards officials? I was watching soccer the other day, and a guy got a yellow card, just for arguing the call. He probably went too far and said something bad. But same thing in the NFL, these 15-yard penalties. You know, that's not only a first down, that's another 5 yards towards the next first down.
Well, the one penalty I don't like just thinking about in the NFL is a pass interference 40 yards down the field or 50 yards down the field, and they put the ball there. That's like a 40-yard penalty or a 50-yard penalty. I like the college rule, 15 years from the previous spot, and I think that's more fair. But to have these long, long penalties, it changes the game. So nobody's asking me that, but that's one thing I would like to see changed.
What about 1 foot inbounds versus 2 feet inbounds in football?
I think that's the difference between college and pros. I think having 2 feet in makes it even – it's such a tough thing to do, to drag that foot. Now, without replay, it's really hard to see. But I'm okay with that 1 foot versus 2 feet because of the difference in the athletes.
Do old school officials tease new school officials about that? Oh, well, you had the benefit of replay. We had to kind of go with our gut and our instincts right on the spot.
I think that replay's been around long enough where most of the officials coming into the NFL or major college, they're used to it. I think really what they tell you, if you're not sure if it's a fumble or or not. Let the play go. Don't blow your whistle if it's complete or incomplete. That's real important. Then they can fix it in replay. So I'm all.
I don't know if you could ever admit this to us, but have you ever executed a makeup call in basketball or football? Just, you know, we feel like that's happened. The announcers openly say it. We feel like the coaches sometimes work towards it. Come on, you know, you didn't give me the foul now, but maybe you can make it up to them on the next one.
I think the coaches say they're always hoping to get the next call.
Yeah.
I don't think I've consciously done it, but, you're aware that the coach says, hey, it's 10-1 in fouls. What's wrong with you guys? I think that comes into play, even subconsciously.
What do you say to them when they tell you that?
Something like, hey, I don't count them. I just call them.
There you go.
There you go. Mark's always to the point. It's always fun to chat with you about sports just because you've been around and done so much. So thanks for allowing us to tiptoe outside of combat sports and kind of recant and relive some of the stuff you did. For those that don't know, Mark did officiate high school football, college football. Last game was in Texas, right?
Cotton Bowl.
2006.
That was.
And then, of course, he's done a lot of work in basketball. Currently the timekeeper, if that's the correct term, for UNLV. And
Shot clock
operator. There you go. And then you also work the helmets in football, right, at Allegiant Stadium?
Coach to player cutoff operator.
Well, that's a long title. They don't have an easier one than that one?
Just make sure I turn the mics on and cut them off at 15 seconds on the play clock.
A lot of people don't know this, but it's not only the offensive coordinator talking to the quarterback. Doesn't the defense get one guy too?
Absolutely. It's two different – somehow they split it up, but it's one machine that cuts it off, but it's two different feeds.
And they're cut off at 15 as well?
Yeah.
Can you hear them?
No.
Oh. Wow. All right. That's cool. Great playoffs we just had, right, for the NFL?
The best, yeah. The four games before last week, the two games this week. The Super Bowl has a lot to live up to. So, great games.
Yeah. I was looking at the props yesterday. They are saying just play overtime. The way things have gone, an overtime should be in play. Thank you, Mark, for the time today. We're definitely going to pick up the book. I can't wait to get our hands in it, read it, and hopefully we can have a follow-up in a few months.
Yeah. Give me a book report. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, we'll see you. See, now I want to go watch a UNLV basketball game.
Yeah. I can't believe how much that guy works, dude. Like, really, honestly. He's at that game. Then you'll see him at the Raider games, and you'll see him at, you know, high school sports just being a fan, like, he does so much. He's really like, if Las Vegas had a Hall of Fame, not a sports one, just a Hall of Fame, he should be in it. Like, he's done a lot for the community.
He sure has. And I always enjoy talking to him. And you guys should all order the book. I actually got mine yesterday. I wish I had it handy, but I really do have it. And it looks like it's going to be an easy read. And you know it's going to be interesting. By the way, UNLV stands at 13-10 overall. Boise State is at the top of that Mountain West division. But goes, let's make it a point to maybe get out to a game, because he's right. 7,000, when that place seats like 19 or 20, and you know that if they're ranked in the top 10, all of a sudden people start going. But right now might be a good time to just get a good seat and support.
Yeah, they I think they're on the comeback. I know I've said this a couple times, but this team, I think, has done a little better than we all expected, and it's well coached, and they're already starting to get a couple good recruits. So I think the future is pretty promising.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right. So, sorry about that. Let's talk about Joe Rogan. Goes, he's had a week. He's had a month. I don't know where he's at right now. But it seems like every day when he wakes up, there's just people finding different things that he's said in his past. Dude, he started podcasting not too long after us. We started in 2007. I would say that by 2009, if I had to guess, a couple years, he started doing his, and now his is the biggest podcast, you know, in the world, and one of the largest mediums of, you know, like interviews, I guess, it, you know, bar any type of news show. And, you know, he gets he has 11 million listeners to every episode. He's a giant. But he has gotten caught up in, I don't like to use cancel culture, I guess, too much as a term, because if they're threatening to do that, it's, they didn't just wake up and do it. Like, no one's trying to do it to us because we haven't said anything or done anything that would upset people. You know, a lot of times it is pretty ridiculous when people attack somebody. But in this case, you know, it all started with misinformation dealing with COVID-19 and some of the guests that he had. And so then Joe addressed it. Okay. And man, I thought he showed a lot of humility. He was quick to respond and apologize and said, I will do better. First, it was the doctors that were kind of coming after him. I guess 200 and some of the top doctors and scientists in the world were saying that this isn't right. His audience is big, and they're spilling too much information out there that just isn't accurate. He needs to be more responsible. Then musician Neil Young said, you know what? It's either him or I. He really said that. Ultimatum. Spotify said, okay, well, we're sticking with Rogan. And so Neil Young said, all right. And so then he was gone. He asked for all of his music to be removed. And then that got, he was joined by other artists. And in that process, one of the other artists that wanted to take her music down was a black lady, an African-American lady. India? What was her name? Indy?
I don't remember her name.
Okay, I'll look it up in just a second. Anyway, she said, well, not so much do I stand with Neil Young because of this disinformation, but I just think the man's a racist. That's a strong word. That's a strong word for me to have to say right now. And it's a strong word for someone to accuse someone else of. But the way she did it was with a video compilation of him inappropriately using the N-word over 20 times. And that was pretty powerful. I saw it and I just thought, wow, like that's unfortunate that it's been that many times. It's unfortunate when it's been one time. But see, I tend to give a looser leash to people in entertainment, especially comedians, and especially with the way a video can be doctored. So I was thinking, like, you know, is he on stage? Is he recanting a story? And is there a black person sitting in front of him where they've showed a certain level of comfort and they're discussing disparaging terms? You know, what is happening right here is what I would want to know when, if somebody were to tell me, hey, did you hear this? Context, they call it. But when they just shove 20 some right at you in a video like that, you're like, oh man, you know. Now, to his credit again, he got out there and apologized and mentioned how disgusted he was with himself, how embarrassed he was. And I also thought that sounded very sincere, his apology. I just don't know if it's enough for some. I believe in second chances. I believe that every single human on this planet is a racist. Or I always say this, has racist fibers in them to a certain degree. Some in just the form of 1%, you know, a 0.5%, you know, just like, hey, come here, amigo, you know, or just joking like that, like seriously, where it's not even in any way offensive, but just knowing that you communicate with somebody in a teasing way all the way up until when you can say something like the N-word or whatever, or act even worse, kill somebody, you know, because of their race or color or whatever. And anyway, man, you know, a big, strong supporter of Joe Rogan early on, The Rock, looks like he has rethought his stance. And of course, this has really, really just been, it's been everywhere. I've seen the MMA community address it. I've seen other celebrities address it. I've seen just regular fans, regular human beings on Twitter addressing it. And it has been something else this past weekend.
Yeah, 2022 has not been kind to this guy at all. Look, the first thing he came out on Instagram and kind of gave an explanation that I thought was pretty damn good, and he took accountability.
Yeah,
and I think that's a good start. You know, don't let everybody else control your information. Like, go out there and just tell everybody what you feel. I think that's a good start. And then everything with the N-word, that was pretty brutal. You know, a lot of people want this guy to get canceled, and I understand where they're coming from. But I guess my take on this whole thing is, I don't even know if you call it a second chance, because it's just, you got to know that there's, I don't care where you're at or what you're doing, you just can't say that word. There's nothing good is going to come out of it. There's nothing good, and there's nothing that you can grasp better by using that than just saying the N-word or whatever. So I just don't think you should do it, and let alone that many times over that long period of time. So I think at this point, you know, he sees that he's hurt a lot of people. I don't think he's a racist, but I do think he made a very big mistake. And so if I'm Spotify, I talk to him and just, I have to make sure that he realizes he's wrong. That's the first thing. And I think Joe realizes he's wrong. So I don't know what canceling him does. If anything, I think let's see how he reacts to this. You know, if he keeps doing it, then yeah, you're an asshole. You got to go. But if he just turns things around, doesn't ever do this again, then I think the point was made. He apologized for what he did. He admitted he was wrong. And I'm not saying you have to love him now, you know, or try and love him. But I think he's done what he can do on his side. And we'll just see what, now it's all on his shoulders. Let's see what he does going forward.
According to the musician, her name is Ari. He's saying you should never utter that word. So she's addressing anything from, hey, shut up, stupid N-word, to, hey man, did you hear Samuel L. Jackson say the word N-word? He's just, don't even say that word, you know. And then, but that compilation, holy cow, like that, I don't know what to say about it.
That's why I say you should never say it, because people can always just take that and not provide any I'm not saying there's context that's going to make it right, but there's definitely context that's going to ease it. There's a difference between somebody just saying the word out in the middle of the street, and then maybe perhaps somebody telling a story or something like that. But right, you get zero context that way. That's why, right, I always say, just never say it, because somebody can always, not just that word, just words in general that offend people. Even if you're trying to describe something or whatever, I'm telling you, people can just take it and do whatever the hell they want with it. And it's always your voice, your words. And unless you have the whole episode to prove what was going on or whatever, people aren't going to sit around and wait for that.
Why did that lady choose to escalate it like that? Now this is me just trying to learn, because she said she stands with Neil Young. She pulls her music, and then she gave a great explanation about how Spotify actually has a lot of black entertainers, a lot of black musicians that go there. And she explained how, you know, they get a certain cut out of every time their music is played, and this money's used to fund the podcast lineup that they're building, and she just doesn't want to be a part of that. So I thought that explanation, I stand with Neil Young, disinformation, okay. But she seemed like she was holding on to something for a while, and then she also seemed like what she gave us in the terms of that video was something where you tell someone to tone something down, and they say, who, me? I don't have a problem. And then you give them a warning. Oh, you may want to check yourself, you know, before you wreck yourself. Because I got the goods. Man, you ain't got nothing. I'm a comedian, you know. Oh, yeah, blam. You know what I mean? And she just went to, oh, yeah, blam, like right away. Like, she just pulled out the shotgun. His little toe was barely inside the house, and she just put a hole in him, man.
Yeah, dude. Man, this has been a rough year for that guy. But I honestly think
he's got kids. He's oh man, and look, I know he's filthy rich and famous, and he leads a good life and everything, but that big shotgun blast, I don't know if it that blast is something you use for someone that like is really, really racist, a noted Ku Klux Klan member, a noted far right person that you can tell that you've told before don't use the word, and they still do it over and over. I mean, it's, you know, and I don't think that's really accurately him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm not about to go look at all 20 to see why he said. I've seen a couple or whatever. He's never struck me as that. I think people that are rich and powerful, rich and famous, are also powerful, and along with that comes a certain immaturity and a certain level of elitism that where you feel certain things just kind of don't apply. Kind of like the rich guy that is in a hurry, forgot to buy his wife a Valentine's gift, and he parks right on Rodeo Drive where everyone knows it's illegal, but he knows that they're not going to tow him. They're just going to give him an $800 parking ticket, and he doesn't care because he's got the money. Yeah. So he'll go in there. He'll probably cut the line, pay whatever, and then come back out, grab the ticket, rip it up, or maybe just calls manager and say, hey, take care of it, or that type of elitism where you don't kind of care about what the rest of us care about. That I could see, you know, him and others that I guess have a lot of wealth.
I'd probably be that guy too. I mean, I'll be straight up.
Yeah.
I would probably little fines like that right now with the money that I make would hurt. But if I'm a multimillionaire, I wouldn't care. I'd probably do stupid things like that.
Yeah. All right. We'll probably talk more about this on Thursday because I don't think this is done. I in no way think Spotify should end their run with Joe Rogan. I really like what Ghost said in terms of let's see what he does going forward. And let's see if those actions match the words from his two apologies, the one addressing misinformation, I don't even know which is the right word there, of COVID and what he's been accused of there, and then also his apology for his repeated use of the N-word. I as of this moment, do not know if he'll be on the call for UFC 271, but guess who will? Goes and I will be doing a watch-along for UFC 271, which is in Houston, Texas, on Saturday. We'll start with a preview show with Farah Hanoun. She'll do what she did last time, kind of give you the, you know, all the nuggets applying to all the big-name fighters like Tai Tuivasa and Derek Lewis, as well as the title fight and other big ones that are taking place on Saturday night. Then Goes and I at 8 Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll join you for about 4 hours. We do the prelims and then the main card, and then John Morgan steps in to clean things up. He'll do the post-fight show, and also they'll send it to the post-fight press conference where a lot of times, you know, we find out some news nuggets there as well. All right, Mark Ratner's book is called Ringside, and you can get it quickly on Amazon. That's what I did. It's called My Life Outside the Ropes and the Octagon. It cost me $14.99. And I already have it ready to check out. And then lastly goes, you know, I know we went through the card real fast, but did you have anything in terms of Brendan Allen, Shavkat Rachmanov, Sam Alvey losing 8 straight, Trazion Gore, Brian Battle? Did you want to add something to that? Juicy or Julian Arosa, man, banking over 100K just in bonuses alone. Hakeem Duwadu. What do you want to talk about?
I want to ask Brian Battle. If you notice at the end, he brought in the tough trophy that they gave him. And I'm just curious, had he lost, was his intention to give that trophy to Trazion Gore?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I've been dying to ask him that. So maybe we could catch up with him. But I don't know. I think if he was going to do that, that's a pretty noble gesture.
It is. You remember when Paulo Filho gave Chael Sonnen the WEC middleweight title? Belt, yeah. Because he missed weight and Chael kicked his ass, and it really prevented Chael from ever winning a belt in mixed.
Yeah. No, I remember that moment. That was pretty cool. It was at the Hard Rock, I believe, but I think we might have even been there. I'm not sure.
I think so as well. All right. We're going to get on out of here, folks. I did want to say Trazion Gorgos, I thought, could have won that fight. I think he really is going to be a problem for some fighters. He's really thick. He's got nice techniques. He just doesn't throw enough. But when he throws, man, whether it's a kick or a punch or an elbow, holy cow, does it come with some fury and anger. Just doesn't do it enough. But Brian Battle deserved to win it because of the volume, because of the strikes. But Gore, if he looks back at that, he's going to see some missed opportunities. But I think Gore can definitely clean a few things up, and I think he'll be someone to be reckoned with. And I just think that's the case with a lot of fighters. You have to give a little bit more, and I'm starting to think that conditioning class might be the most important thing an MMA fighter can do nowadays. Because if you're at the level of the UFC, you got skills. What you don't want to do is not have less energy than your opponent. Folks, we will see you all later this week for our second show of the week. We'll keep promoting UFC 271's watch along. We'll finish up with anything regarding this past fight night card. It was actually UFC 200, and of course, all the latest news. We'll touch on that. Hey, check out Spinning Backclick, where we also touch on the latest headlines. It drops every Tuesday over at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video, the same spot you can catch the full interviews that Goz and I do with our guests like Mark Ratner and others that we've had on the show recently. All right, folks, we're out of here. Enjoy your Monday. Go out there and be a champion.